Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Christ, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're the last bit.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Got them.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon. Well, so inaugural of Barack, and now we can say it. President Barack Obama. What a delight to finally say that, to not have to say president-elect anymore. He's been through the political war. He's now achieved the presidency of the United States, the highest political office in this country, the most powerful office in the world. And Barack Obama is there. It's official. He was sworn in. I was there. It was a wonderful sight to see, an amazing crowd. We have so many stories, anecdotes to tell you about what has taken place here today. But last night was in a situation couldn't get sleep, and starting actually at about 4 o'clock. I'm not a major. And what was a long and heavy stream of people heading to all night long, string at 4 o'clock, through the time I left this morning, and every street you walked on, it was extremely. Any place to forget about driving. It was difficult to walk anywhere. The sidewalks were full. You could barely go. You had to walk in the street, and at least we're yelling at you, don't walk in the street. And it was just almost impossible to get around. It was the interesting that I found. Tens or hundreds of people, who knows, people just milling around. I spoke to people who came down, knew they were not close. They just wanted to be here to experience history. Busloads after busloads of people coming in did see the inaugural. And they came in because they wanted to be near what was going to happen. Such a historic day. So we certainly hope our prayers for both of them are all right. same senators, Robert Edward Kennedy, last at this in the Missouri Hall in the Capitol building of Field Place. Yeah, all great is all around them. Get a tour of the White House. Actually, sad. I don't know if they'll do that anymore. But, you always could go see that tour. Hall's a spectacular. So, lunch. So, I was walking this morning from heading over to Rio Road for a medal ceremony, and I passed 22 semi 18-wheeler loads of horses just in Kentucky. Where else? 20 horses, I guess they're all going to be in the parade. I saw so many trucks of horses in my whole street with trucks full of horses. What do you think about this? Which thing of still remember to go down and covered just about everything. Most cheers were the line with the work we have here in the United States. And he mentioned at the great round of applause, he did mention we are outside the building. Sirens everywhere today. We are currently New Jersey Avenue, which is about a half a block off of Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, it is going over there, so you'll hear background noise from time to time. Another broadcast we have maybe seven other shows going on in the room at the same time, and there's another room, another and then over they've got seven or eight more going. So simultaneously, quite a few programs of all some of the big guys that you've heard of. One that's not here. You can't tell me break it up with it. So go away.
I'm fine. Oh, not as much. Dropping dead. I worked for him for 2 years. You got my box? No, I didn't put that in. But in he was the way I said the youth vote director in Massachusetts. When I was in. Was it somewhere here?
We're back live from the event of Barack Obama. A whole thing to put aside finally. As you all know, I'm happy that a Democrat is president. Anytime a Democrat is elected president makes me happy because we bill ourselves as the only broadcaster that says we're a liberal Democratic talk show. So we have Barack Obama. So right now, with us a gentleman that introduction around the political game, around the political spectrum, and we have Bob Wiener. He's a strategist. He's seen him on the paper. Bob, will do the program.
Be with you. From Mars, I was the House Congressman Claude Pepper, and I'm thrilled to be on with the Florida State. But of course, I think we're all tempered at this very moment, knowing that Ted Kennedy and Burr are in the hospital, having collapsed probably from the brutal cold during the operation, having been out there for hours, as my wife and I experienced when we knew watching something really historic for America. But what a sad. Hopefully they'll both be all right.
Oh, on this historic day, them both go down with the whatever it is. They're it's just really sad. Ted Kennedy is of course there's better champion for
right.
the people than Ted Kennedy. Never ever.
He was
ever.
Fighting for national health care long before both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama
That's
got
right.
at it.
And you were with Claude Pepper, and there's no
yeah.
great, there's nobody that ever fought harder for retired folks, and he's a legend in Florida.
We need Claude Pepper's courage now when it comes to Social Security. I remember when I sat there with him, and we went into James Burke, who was the chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Retirement. Pepper was the chair of the Agings Committee, and James Burke and Pepper went into the cabinet. It was actually the Carter cabinet. And we told them that they told them Pepper and Burke said they would fight to the death to not have benefits reduced under Social Security, and Burke said, you mean you'd fight it tooth and nail on the floor? Absolutely, I would fight to the death. And then the Carter cabinet people said, well, I guess we didn't really make the proposal anyway, because they just wheedled right away when they realized that the leader in Congress, led by Pepper on this, was going to fight against cuts in Social Security. And that's what we need now, because it's such a myth, Social Security, to say that there's a shortfall when, in fact, it's solvent until 2042, according to the budget office, trustees, 2052, according to the budget office. And even then, it's only a 25% shortfall, which could solve at that point, 30 years from now, by one-fourth the cost of the war annually. And it might even be the economy improved. It really needs to be improved. But the Republicans and the business interests are trying forever to get people to go to privatization of Social Security. And gee, that would be just great now if people had their 401ks define have been cut in half over the last year, define what their food on the table would be instead of Social Security. So we got to fight on that still, because we can't let the media control the agenda on that one.
And they have for a long time.
And they still are.
Well, how do you think the Obama administration their views on this now? Are they going to accept our views on this? We feel about Social Security? Are they going to fight?
Well, I've talked with Pelosi. She said we've won on Social Security over the last administration, and I actually talked to Reid people, and they pulled it off. Now Bush lost 10 points. He brought up Social Security every time he talked about it. He lost 10 points. And people understand the issue. Obama has actually been very properly evasive when the media tries to trap him on it. He puts it in the context that we have to improve the economy, and yes, we have to address entitlements. He never says Social Security, we have to cut it. But then the head Obama, it's not what he says if you read what he says. He puts it in the context of the economy and maybe entitlements,
And he runs away with good reason from saying we're going to cut Social Security. I don't know why the media is compulsive about putting that out there as an agenda item, but they keep trying to do it. But a politician who does that is going to fight for his life, because Newt Gingrich told me they never saw the White House handle any issue worse than they did Social Security. My wife and I saw the Kennedy Center, and that's what he said to us. When they put that out there and pushed privatization and tried to cut Social Security, that was the beginning of the end. The two questions for it was the first issue. I don't think our side is stupid enough to make that mistake again, and I'm sure going to do everything I can with more op-eds. I'd invite your listeners to go. I had a piece in the Palm Beach Post, one in the Tallahassee Democrat, one in the Miami Herald, all on this issue, laying out the real facts on Social Security financing and the recent pieces over the last couple of years. It's wienerpublic.com, wienerpublic.com, and then click on op-eds, and your listeners will see it. Look at the ones on Social Security, and then write your congressmen and your senators and say, don't let them steal Social Security from us.
In that book, admitted just last week, I wasn't even talking about any mistakes he might have said. Well, I might have had bad timing on bringing up the Social Security when I did. He knows that politically that was a big hit for him.
But he doesn't admit that he was wrong on the issue.
No.
He still, to this moment, wants to take people's guaranteed incomes and turn it into slicing and dicing by the stock market. And that's a hard thing when you realize that the market's at 8,500, was at 12,000 under, and by inflation would be at over 15,000 now. So you're, instead of 15,000, you're half the stock market and a Clinton.
And absolutely correct. If Social Security had been on that, imagine so many pensions
that
were involved. Pension and Social Security going down the tubes.
So that's the other huge problem, where I also have a piece in the Miami Herald on the destruction of the private pension system in America. There's half as many as there used to be 20 years ago. Companies are running away and putting them into 401ks, and now people, we're going to have a return to food lines and poverty the way that we're going. That's what Obama has got to address. The economy is in such a spin on time, on jobs. He lost 2,000 the last year, 2 million the last year, created 20 million. Now, I think there's hope, though. People see it. People see it, Guy, because here's an administration that isn't the tax break rich. I had an 84-year-old friend who just died, said he never saw an administration, a president with one agenda item to give all the tax breaks to the rich, and that's what this guy wanted to do. Obama isn't going to do that, and he's not going to plug all the money into a war that's an economic sieve, and he's not going to let the oil companies run rampant with no oversight. If the steps you then accomplish with Bill, 20 jobs, and you lose millions. So there's an economic upturn that I think will happen shortly.
You're involved in the Clinton administration.
I was in the administration as a public affairs spokesman for 6.5 years. Including as the spokesman for the drugs are the 4-star general.
Yes, and you've really gotten around in politics. You work for some really high profile
amazing
people.
Amazing people. I've had a one career. Hopefully it's not over. You know, I used to say when I was chief of staff at the House Aging Committee that I have a conflict of interest because I'm going to be old someday. Unfortunately, now that is coming to pass. As I was 28 then, I'm 60 now. But I think there's no limit in what you can do.
You're just a kid, Bob.
There's no limit. I worked for Ted Kennedy, Claude Pepper, Ed Koch, Charlie Rangel, Jim Conyers, Bill Clinton, and Barry McCaffrey, and among people in my sordid life. And I had the privilege of running the press room, the daily press briefing room at the Democratic National Convention this year. And so it goes on and on.
Keeping us informed. I was there and we had press briefings all the time. It was great.
Thank you.
That was a great media event, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Well run. We were very impressed.
Well, my philosophy is the more truth the American people have, the better they are, which is completely the contrast of what this administration has done with 15 million lost emails, secret energy meetings, and intelligence that was secretly wrong. And they Cheney, you know, the untold story? Cheney went over to Langley twice and pushed the CIA into making the priority that there were no WMDs instead of the footnote at the end, which said, but that might not be the case. And so we wound up fighting a war that's cost us, you know, all those lives and dollars and $1 trillion it's cost us so far. So truth is really important, and I hope that, and believe that this administration will be much better at it.
Now, Baba, I didn't know this. Of course, you have such an extensive bio; it's hard to keep track of everything.
You know, thanks. I tried to put it in one page.
We know well. You didn't do a good job of getting it in one page. You had to condense quite a bit of it. But you know, we know about the high points. But you're on the board of governors of the National Democratic Club.
Correct.
I didn't know that. Can you tell me a little bit about the National Democratic Club?
That's an arm of the Democratic National Committee. It's actually a restaurant and a meeting, and it's where all the 200-plus Democrat members of Congress have their fundraisers. And it's a lot of fun. Because
looks right onto the DNC building there.
Yes, it's right. It's right in the DNC building.
Yeah.
In fact, we used to own the whole DNC building. We sold it to them so they could expand. And so it's a lot of fun to be at the center of the action. We went there right after the speech today, and the place was. People told me that the manager that the whole club was in tears during Obama's speech, and they were singing na 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 bye bye as Cheney left, as Bush left, you know. So it was just it's a fun place to be at the center of things.
It is, and for those of you that haven't been to the new web court, they were in the temporary headquarters before they moved down to what is Capitol Street, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, well, actually, we were in the Watergate during the Watergate years of the Watergate headquarters. I worked at the Watergate. I was the youth vote director for I don't even know if that's in there, but for the Democratic National Committee. I was the first youth vote director right after the Constitutional Amendment passed, giving kids the vote.
Are you insulted that they didn't break into your office, or maybe
they
did?
They did, and I was interviewed by the FBI. I had to do a deposition. And I wondered why, when we did our youth vote forums and news conferences all over the country, it seemed as though the Republicans were there a day in front. And that's why. My office was one, and my phones were among those that were broken into.
And you actually testified Ken Starr got a...
I've been Watergate to Whitewater. Ken Starr, the New York Times, I was the first witness that went out on the courthouse steps and talked about Starr's overreach. And my wife and I were subpoenaed by our phone records because this is the stupidest thing. Pat, my wife, was on the treadmill watching TV when her friends in the town she used to live, Columbia, Maryland, put out a press release. I mean, this is public stuff on television saying that Linda Tripp wiretaps of taping Lewinsky's conversations were illegal because Maryland is a two-party, not a one-party consent state. So we called up our friends and said, congratulations for your press release. Ken Starr thought this was some White House conspiracy in front and thought I was obstructing justice and all this kind of garbage, and I'll use stronger words in private. And when it was free speech, are calling our friends. So we went out on the courthouse steps right after I testified and said, this is Big Brother at its worst. It really scares you. It's a partisan witch hunt. It's why the American people hate the whole Ken Starr investigation. And we helped launch Ken Starr's disintegration into single digits while Bill Clinton went up to 70 in the polls. But what an outrage that he launched an investigation
Who was it when he first came into town, when they first appointed him? He came into town and I can't remember.
Three senators. He had lunch with them.
I'm going to get your boy. That was what he said. Get your boy. Yeah.
And he was a Republican appointee before that. That's not who you want doing an investigation.
No.
You know, I think John Conyers is right that we need to investigate the presidency of Bush and the lost emails and the torture and the illegal wiretapping, but you cannot do it as a partisan matter. You have to do it, and Conyers made the point that it cannot be a partisan issue. That would be illegal. It has to be on the basis of justice. It has to be on the basis of exactly what's proper, what's right, and we're law broken. They were broken by this administration. Waterboarding is torture. We have prosecuted in the past. We had people with what hasn't come out, another thing that hasn't come out, in addition to Cheney going over to Langley, is that the general who was in charge of the torture policy in Guantanamo and now the DOD head of legal affairs in Guantanamo just said, yes, they did torture, that's why they can't do some prosecutions. He was sent to Abu Ghraib to do the same thing, and they called it Gitmoizing Abu Ghraib. Why isn't that guy in front of a court? Why isn't he being prosecuted? Why isn't he in jail? He and the Department of Defense head of intelligence, Stephen Cambone, who authorized that, why are they not in jail for crimes they should be? And Conyers is right about that.
Well, as you know, the last time I had a chance to interview John Conyers and another fellow and I were talking to him, we were a little upset that a lot of stuff came off the table when Nancy Pelosi came
right.
in and said it was. We thought maybe John would push
Let
on.
Let me tell you the reasoning on that. I was in privy to that, and I did an op-ed in the Detroit Free Press, which to all these op-eds that I do, it's www.wienerpublic.com. If we had gone impeachment against Bush, it not only would have been turned the country into hugely divisive, we would have gotten nothing else in the way of all the investigations, all the legislation, all the college loan improvements, all the economic improvements that had to be, everything that the entire congressional agenda would have been off the table and it would have been completely deflected. So it was a real politic to sit, not that's different than the oversight investigations of laws that were broken. It's a very different stance than breaking laws, and it's one which you have to really tell the American people that we're going to stop everything and do only that.
Think it's
Of course not. It's retroactive. They won't impeach. But do I think now that there will be
investigation?
Yes. And remember, Holder even testified and said that they will take those issues one by one. He's not going to make a blanket statement. You can't make a blanket statement, we're going to prosecute everything Bush did. He said there's a difference, and he's right, between policy and legality. So when they take that into account and you come up with these guys tortured, these guys destroyed emails, those are legal issues that if the Justice Department doesn't investigate those, it's remiss, and there should be a real movement to cause them to investigate and to prosecute.
Do you think Holder is so inclined to go?
I think it's got to be on the basis of justice, not politics, and so he's going to be very even-keeled. You know, Obama's a cool, calm, and collected guy, and I think Holder's got to keep his from that. I think it's got to be a cool, calm, and collected process. And I think it's got to be very carefully selected. It's got to be somebody who you can really make the case on and get the evidence on. The fact that I'm telling you that, the Department of Defense inspector, head of legal issues in Guantanamo, says that she's not prosecuting because there was torture and therefore you can't win the case. That's one thing, but now you got the evidence. You have to get the evidence and compile it of the torture, and you have to do all. You have to do a lot more than what I just said to make a prosecution.
We know about so many people said, and you've heard this mantra over and over and over again. It's in the past. We can't look at the past. I think it's for the future that we need to do that.
Of course it is. Of course, because there'll be future administrations that try to abuse power the same way.
Democrat or Republican. I mean, it could happen
right.
Either way. Why don't they see that?
It sickens me. It really does, Guy, when I see people corrupt and do the kinds of things that we just saw a Democratic congressman a couple of days ago who just got out of jail. That's as bad as Republicans and what they did. There's no question about it. What Foley did and Abraham. All those things. There's no excuse for it. I don't understand it, to be honest. I know that when I was the chief of staff of the House Aging Committee, I wouldn't even let Claude Pepper come close to a lobbyist who was offering money, and I would only pay my own. I would always pay my own meals. I would never touch lobbying as a, you don't need to. If you're in politics, you should be in there for the power of doing good for people, and that should be what turns you on, not money. You're in it for the wrong reason.
That congressman just got a jail from Ohio?
Yep.
Okay.
You know who I'm talking about?
Oh, I know
him.
Is there anybody that doesn't?
Yeah. I gave too much away on that one.
That was a long time coming.
Yeah.
Even back from this.
I'm not talking about Trickhand. It's a different guy.
Oh, Poe.
Nay.
I say Nay. Yeah. Yeah, he's
Edgar Allan Poe. He wrote about jails, pits and pendulums.
He was at a halfway house. I think he's going to work for a radio station in Columbus. Nay is what I heard.
That's what he's doing now. He's doing political commentating. My reaction is, why do I want to hear from a guy who did what he did?
Same thing.
Oliver North. Same thing. Why do we give the credibility to those guys? Why do we let them tell us what we should be thinking as Americans if that's what they thought as non-Americans, to my way of thinking?
Well, Bob, all in all, we're here at the inauguration.
Yeah.
And are you have the same mood. This whole time, you're grinning, I'm grinning, everybody. Plus finals today, and it's been wonderful to see people come treat the smiling faces and tears of joy in many cases coming from this great inaugural. And I think it's
that way. Well, we had a sea of 2 million frozen feet and warm hearts crying for change and overjoyed it has begun.
That's the Bob Wiener.
Thanks, guy. What a lot of fun being with you.
Yes. Well, do you guys live in Florida, or do you live here?
I'm back and forth, but I live in Washington.
Okay.
You're in Fort Myers. We're Accokeek. It's the town across from Mount Vernon that you see in the woods, zoned to be the woods from Mount Vernon.
Okay. All right. I'm off that now on that. So much to Bob Wiener for being
on
the Guy James Show today. We're going to turn it back to Ag for just a moment to take us into a break. I guess we're a little past the bottom of the hour. Good. And Agnes, if you're ready, why take it away, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Great. Were we live?
Yeah.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Wow, what a day. It was hard to watch any of the inauguration coverage without being overwhelmed by the momentousness of the day, the jubilant crowds, milling, dancing in all their multitudinous diversity, the tears of African Americans, some descendants of slaves, the tears of white Americans, some the descendants of slave owners, the tears of civil rights veterans and of their children and their grandchildren. The symbolism was lost on no one, and there were tears even in my jaded eyes. For a country so marked and scarred by 400 years of racism, this was a giant step forward, and no, it doesn't mean that racism is dead, because that putrid body is still kicking, but it does mean that when 83% of the American public now supports Barack Obama, that racism has been smacked upside the head. Let America be America again, let it be the dream it used to be, said Langston Hughes, the great Harlem poet, who added acidly, America never was America to me. Well, today, America is a step closer to being America to Langston Hughes, if he were only here to enjoy it, to Barack and Michelle Obama, and to all of us. It is time, as Langston Hughes said, to make America again. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calls.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you have is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
Oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Changing the radio stations.
And we're on the welcome, and thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon. I see we've got a great audience. That's one of the good things about our show being internet, is many people are listening. And maybe there are days when it's not. Right now, it is my privilege to have with us Tom. Tom is policy associate, IAVA, and I'll let him explain what that org. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Guy. Thanks for having me. IAVA is the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. We are the first and largest nonpartisan nonprofit, and our mission statement is very simple. We want to improve the lives of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans and their families.
There's a lot of improvement to be done.
Absolutely. You know, we have about 125,000 members, both veterans and civilians alike. We have a robust legislative agenda, and we work primarily through media interaction, advocacy, and lobbying. We were one of the primary organizations, for example, that passed the GI Bill last year. Us, in partnership with the VFW and the Military Coalition, was able to pass the single most significant piece of legislation for veterans in the last 50 years.
We've seen all the stories over the past several years about Iraq and Afghanistan veterans getting rather shabby war treatment. Has that been a figment of the media? Go after the big story, the worst story. Is that something about the...
There's a lot of certifying negative, and I think that, I mean, in a lot of very serious issues in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, last year or two, have the VA been fully funded for the first time? Were we able to pass the GI Bill? Has the DOD really started to become a proactive organization in dealing with mental health injuries? The VA has started to turn around, although the VA needs massive transformation. It needs to modernize itself. It needs to become a proactive organization. Where they need to reach out to veterans. Right now, only 30% of veterans even use the VA or have any really interaction with the VA at all.
Can you explain why that is? Is it just they just don't need it, or they prefer to go elsewhere?
Some don't need it. Some go elsewhere. Some simply don't know what the VA provides. You know, and I think if you talk to any VSO, I'd say a good 60% of our job is informing veterans of things that the VA should be informing them. If the VA was a proactive organization, we probably wouldn't exist or would exist in a much different type of form. I mean, the VFW and the DAV, for example, I'm sorry, the Veterans of Foreign Wars and Disabled American Veterans, they provide service officers where they guide veterans through their disability claims. The fact that the disability process is so convoluted and so complex that you need to have someone with 30 years experience just to help you fill out the form and go through it is amazing.
Well, isn't this akin to like when you get a job someplace, you get a position, the human resources people sit down and go over all the benefits that your job, you mean the military isn't?
No, transition assistance in some places do it than others. It's not uniform. Some posts have what's called this benefit still discharge.
It's a post problem.
It's a post problem. It's a problem with communication between the Department of Defense and the VA. And please forgive me if this sounds a little patronizing, but really people don't understand that the DOD and the VA are two very separate branches of the government. It's like the post office and the DOJ. They don't necessarily talk to each other very well. It just happens that the people that use those services at some point or another are the same people. And so one of the things that we are always trying, along with other VSOs, is to increase that transition. You know, DOD, Department of Defense disability, is different than VA disability. They look at different things. And how those two systems interact and talk to each other has been a problem for the last 70 years.
One of the problems we've heard a lot about is post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Absolutely.
I've concentrated on that on my program with a couple of there's a famous case of a young gentleman from Findlay, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It was been written about in magazines. Pretty much told the story, and it's pretty much been proven and corroborated by other people, that when he came back and does have a post-traumatic stress syndrome problem, they'll, in many cases, and again, probably depending on the post, do their very best to just write that off as nothing.
Well, and that's been a problem amongst many systems. It's been a problem in the DOD to try to acknowledge these issues. Much more proactive with their Defense Centers of Excellence for mental health injuries. General Sutton over at the Pentagon is doing amazing work. The Center for Deployment Psychology in Bethesda is doing amazing work in trying to train mental health care professionals and how to deal with combat stress in soldiers. But, you know, overall, the DOD is a couple years too late. So if they had done it right away at the beginning of the war, having a much conversation. And amongst the right, the military is the elite of public service. These men who are asked to surmount tasks with very little resources and time available. So when they come home and start having issues, it's very difficult for someone who is at such a training and a high level of personal to admit that this.
Story reason. They're not subjected to sometimes by people.
And stigma in ranks is a huge problem. And good first sergeants and not to understand that the mental health true. You maintain your weapons, you maintain your physical health. Maintaining health is another system that allows you to be combat effective. If you go, if you have a gunshot in theater, you're going to go seek a patch another day. You know, it is a trauma on the battlefield, and treatment does work. If you get treatment, you're able to getting to the other side of it. And this is something that our organization is pushing. We just started a 3-year public service campaign with the Ad Council. We've launched a commercial, if you've seen it, it's called Alone, where a soldier walks through the deserted streets of New York until he sees another veteran. And once he sees another veteran, the world around him comes alive. Less than 1% of this country has fought in Iraq and Afghanistan. And so we feel isolated when we're in the general public. And it's hard to connect because nobody talks to a vet like another vet. So we created a website called communityofveterans.org, and the Ad Council has you know, taken the ball with this corresponding campaign that leads soldiers to this website. It's a social networking site, much like the Facebook and MySpace, and it's by combat veterans and it's for combat veterans. And it's a safe place where you're talking to people who have done what you've done, who know what you know, who have seen what you've seen. And within a week of starting this, it took off. I mean, there was forums sprouted up from, hey, who's annoyed with being called an Iraqi vet, to, hey, I'm really having trouble talking to my wife, or, hey, I can't sleep, I'm having nightmares, has anyone else dealt with this? And this is not something that we've prodded, this just happened, and we were hoping this would happen, but it's happening because soldiers are seeking out help. They're seeking each other.
Yeah.
You know, soldiers are seeking each other, and 'cause, you know, the military is an organization that promotes camaraderie, and you live in that, you know, that, you know, use a cheesy term, you live in that band of brothers your entire deployment and through your whole military career, and it's very difficult after you leave to lose that, and so people seek that out.
Is this a problem with just funding, or is it mostly attitude and a little bit of incompetence thrown in as well?
I mean, funding's part of it. In the last 2 years, fully funded for the first in its history. That was a huge accomplishment for the 110th Congress. We're hoping that it continues. And we're hoping that they'll see it fit to fund the VA in advance. So every budget cycle, you're not funding for this year, you're funding for the next year. So that the Veterans Health Administration doesn't run out of money every September. People are left stuck with health care. I mean, the VA is unique in that it has customers. It runs the largest health providing system in the world. And it needs secured funding, and that's part of it. But, you know, public apathy is a problem. The VA being an old organization that's, like I said earlier, it's very hard to communicate. And we're hoping General Shinseki is going to be able to turn that around and modernize the VA into a proactive organization. And it's going to take the legislature to find the intestinal fortitude to come out and say, look, these are systems that are not politically sexy. These are issues that are difficult to understand, but these are issues that need to be fixed. Too often when we do with legislation, we find the most identified part of a problem that, you know, is very easy to sell. But the problem is it's usually step three. And if you step three without going back and tinkering with steps one, you're going to compound the problem. And this is something that we've seen the 110th Congress start to figure out. And we're hoping that the 111th Congress, in conjunction with the new administration, is going to take on some of these very difficult issues that the public doesn't necessarily understand. We want them to take them on and really make some progress in the next 4 years.
Well, in some ways, we never could understand unless
this is very true.
Educated by your group, like you've been less than 1%. That's probably part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
When my father was in the Second World War, everybody was, you know.
Right.
They came home by the tens and hundreds of thousands. It's a different situation.
Right. It's part of, you know, one of the things that President Obama has talked about is this call to service. And, you know, when he says call to service, he's been very talking about serving not, you know, exterior of the military. The military service, and in my opinion, and I think many would agree, is the elite of the public service. But forever, we have a professional military, a volunteer military. This is a military of professional people who want to be there, and that this is their chosen career. And that makes the military stronger and efficient. But it's not for everybody. And that's fine. That's great, because, you know, we need people in all sectors of society. So focusing on this theme of service gets you involved in your community, gets you involved in your country, in your government, and involved in what, you know, your military is doing, gets you involved in what's happening with your neighbors. And that's when people start to become aware of these issues and the issues surrounding as a whole, not just the military.
Do you have confidence in to work with you on this?
You know, it's amazing. The biggest difference between this administration and the previous administration is that this administration talks to us. Talks, period. Previous administration, we had to bring kicking and screaming by the throat to every issue, whether we used political muscle or public muscle or, you know, we had to do a lot of sleights of hand just to get these things passed.
And to be fair to them, they did come along.
Yes,
with you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they did. It took a bit of doing to get them to sign the GI Bill, but, you know, the president, despite certain members of the Senate that were vehemently opposed to the GI Bill, the president did eventually come around and say, okay, this is something that's important. And, you know, they've signed the budgets and, you know, they do get credit for that and they deserve that. But it was by no means a proactive process. This administration started calls and the other VSOs on day one. I mean, we were getting calls in our office saying, hey, what do you think about this? Hey, do you guys want to sit down and talk about these issues? And suddenly we're like, oh my God, what, they're listening. Not just listening, they want to talk. You know, they're not taking a meeting to take a meeting. There are lines of communication. This is going to be a very transparent administration, and it's going to bring in best practices and tap all sectors. And this is something that the veteran service community hasn't seen probably in the last 40 years.
Well, that's good news, and very, very good news. I hope it works out for the best, and I think I have a lot of confidence that the Obama people. You brought up an important point. They seem open. They seem really open. Hey, come talk to us. We're hanging out. Tom, I want to thank you very much for explaining all this to us. We're going to keep an eye on it, and maybe we can have you back on our program when we get back to.
I'd love to.
Outside of this chaotic situation
yeah.
at the inaugural right now. Tom Tarantino, thank you so much for being
thank
our
you,
guest.
Guy. Appreciate it.
An issue that is near and dear to many folks' heart. There's any question about that, and we've all been saddened by the cases of neglect and sometimes incompetence that we've seen, and we want to help these folks along. So, hey, if you can't take care of your veterans, you should hang your head in shame. I mean, that's a fact. Who more deserves to be taken care of after they've served? We're going to pause for a break right now. No, actually, we're not. Agnes probably got all excited. We're getting close to the top of the hour here right now. And so we'll stay with it right until up time for news at the top of the hour. Okay. what a day. I'm not qualified to adequately explain the feeling, emotions that I saw today. It is an amazing sight, and again, I want to mention, and I've probably mentioned too often in the last couple of days, but the youth, the people walking everywhere in this just so many young people, and it's such a great thing to say. And one of the important messages, and I think the message, if you had to capsulize everything that Obama talks about, is not only service, but coming together. Coming together. And you mentioned today, all are equal. That's what stands out in this administration. I had dinner last night with a group of Irish folks that I'd met earlier in the day, the ambassador to Ireland and the former EU ambassador. And interesting to guys. And we talked about Ireland and their effect on the world and where they've had such a presence before. In the United States, of course, the Irish have a huge presence in Australia as well. I didn't know that so much before talking to them yesterday, but a great group of guys. And we talked about the relationship between Ireland and the United States and the United Kingdom and how they have felt about this country. Now, you have to know, Irish people have always had a great regard for the United States. I mean, look at all the immigrants that came in after the Great Potato Famine back in the 1800s. They literally lost half of their population. About 1 million people died, and I think 3 or 4 million people immigrated to the United States. So there's always been a fondness there. You can't go to Boston or the Irish influence. And these guys, we talked and talked and talked about the Bush administration had insulted the rest of the world, had betrayed the rest of the world in some cases in many important manners, and not worked with the rest of the world. And they said something to me last night that just hit home. I was both ashamed and happy at the same time. I don't know how you mix those two much, but they said with this new administration, and they came here for the inauguration, they said with this new administration that they can love again. They can love America again. And I was taken by that statement. And they meant it. They meant it because the Irish people have always loved in America, and they repeated something that, you know, we've mentioned over and over again on this program, and they, you know, they got to the point where they were being very frank about what they're saying, and of course that's what I wanted them to do. And you've heard me say this on the program before. People from other nations have said, hey, we've understood and we forgave once for electing a guy like George Bush, and maybe he won it, maybe he didn't. That's just, you know, we'll never know. But he said the second time, he said the people just didn't forgive you for that. So it was a great thing to hear him say that. Now we can love America again, and that just warmed my heart when he said that. So there's only 4 million people in Ireland, but they've had a huge influence on United States of America. So, and also, we've talked to people from many countries here that feel the same way. They didn't put it quite bluntly, but they've used the phrase, well, we will respect America again. We do respect America again. But for the Irish, we will love America again. I thought it was wonderful to hear that. Interesting group of guys. I'm one of those people, if I'm sitting someplace for dinner and somebody's beside me, I'll start talking to them. I really don't know a stranger. And you learn so many things that way, and you meet so many wonderful people that way. They're willing to engage in conversation and more than willing to tell you all about their country. And you always, learn things that you didn't know before. And I didn't actually know. Maybe I knew about their huge presence in Australia, for example. And one of the heroes of the folks in Ireland is Oscar Wilde. You all know his talents. in reverence, actually. And I didn't know that before. Maybe I should have. But anyway, it's always a learning process. We're going to pause for news at the hour here on the Guy James Show, and we hope you'll stick around in our inaugural show. We've got lots more to talk about and several guests coming up as well, so don't go away. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
The road ahead will be long. Our climb will be steep. We may not get there in 1 year or even in one term. But America, I have never been more hopeful than I am tonight that we will get there. I promise we as a people will get there.
President Barack Obama from speech after winning the election in November. All over this country, worker activists, union leader members are full of hope that the Obama administration will not only fix the broken economy and health systems, but will also pass much-needed reforms to rebuild the American dream for the working middle class. Change to Win's Anna Berger.
I'm electing Barack Obama and expanding the pro-worker majority in the House and the Senate was dramatic. And I think that we've set the stage for putting workers and working families back at the top of the agenda as opposed to the bottom of the agenda.
AIO Legislative Director Bill Samuel says that labor's coming push to make sure that officials follow through on promised reforms will be a human rights struggle to restore the American dream.
It's not just about workers' rights, but about human rights and improving the conditions for all workers.
Labor leaders around the country welcome the inauguration of President Barack Obama. Jesse Russell has more.
With Barack Obama taking the presidential oath of office on Tuesday, labor leaders from across the country have been marking the moment with hope that it will signal a new age for organized labor. Metallic Lathers and Reinforcing Iron Workers Local 46 business manager Bob Ludwith.
The workers of our country must be told that a new dawn has arrived and the unions are ready to help achieve and realize the American dream.
Ludwith also noted the end-of-the-year sit-in by the Workers' Republic Windows and Doors in Chicago as a sign that workers are feeling empowered to fight.
Union window factory workers in Chicago have helped spark a new vitality.
If you think the job losses in the U.S. are bad, a leading Chinese scholar is projecting this country could see losses of upwards of 50 million jobs by the end of 2009. According to an article in Australia's The Age, the highest rate of joblessness could come from rural migrants reversing the trend of urbanization in the world's most populous country.
Here is today's economic report. Don't want to be laid up with a cold? A new study suggests plenty of bed rest in general will lessen your chance of needing to get bed rest while you're sick. The study published in the Archives of Internal Medicine discovered that people who get less than 7 hours of sleep a night are nearly three times as likely to catch a cold. And if you tend to toss and turn for less than half an hour a night, your chances of catching a cold jump by five times.
Workers Independent News puts unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
God bless America.
That's the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed, Guy James. And I see Barack Obama is pulling the Jimmy Carter deal here, getting out of the car and walking up the street. I'm trying to determine where he is here on Sylvania Avenue right now. They haven't got up to the DOJ yet. They haven't come to the post office yet, so they're a good ways up the street. And believe it's cool out there. There isn't any doubt about that. And, of course, you can see that they are lined with people, throngs of people here. The people on the actual parade route are all ticketed people. They had to have a ticket to be where they are. And, of course, he will go and sit in the reviewing stand, which has got bulletproof glass and heat, and sit and enjoy the parade for quite some time. And what a parade it's going to be, as it always is. They do put on the dog for this thing. I see Michelle looks nice today in her what do you call that, buttercup color? I don't want to sound like a fashion editor here, but it is a beautiful dress. And frankly, I didn't like the one she had that night in Chicago. I did that red and black deal. I didn't care for that. But a very distinguished-looking couple. You have them and their children, and you've got quite the look, and it's wonderful to see the youth back in the White House and the kids, and a fabulously intelligent woman as a lady who will bring to the White House, and I'm not saying Laura Bush didn't, but Michelle Obama. Very, very special, and I think we're extremely lucky to have this first lady. Extremely lucky. All right, Aggie, to me, my mic is a bit hot. We'll turn it down. We depend on her when we're doing this on. I don't know how about that new presidential limousine? Is that not something I'd like? I haven't seen the price tag on, but it's. Able to with IEDs and the whole bit, from what I understand, gas and the whole deal. It's a shame we have to protect the president that way, but it's a new day, and we have to be cognizant of what could happen, and we must be very, very diligent in protecting the life of the president of the United States. They are coming up Pennsylvania Avenue. They look extremely happy. And why not? Why wouldn't you be? You've just been sworn in as President of the United States, and something you worked very hard for, the campaigning, very difficult, very, very difficult. I think that's the DOJ they're coming to right now. Kind of looks like it. Some of the buildings along there look all alive. A wonderful trip up Pennsylvania Avenue. Today, had somebody at the inaugural that I don't know that's ever been invited to an inaugural before. We had the Tuskegee Airmen were there, several of them, and you all know the story of that. And they were there today and honored, very honored to be there, invited by Barack Obama, men that have been shunned for much of their lives after. Well, if you don't know that story, you can look it up about the Tuskegee Airmen, but they were there today. And here we are after the Martin Luther King Day celebration, and we always talk about this I Have a Dream speech that took place on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. Do you think Martin Luther King could have missed? Do you think this particular scene right here could have been dreamed by Martin Luther King? You know, there's an old Chinese proverb that says a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And I believe that Martin Luther King figured that he took one or two of those steps, but I don't know that he probably realized before his death just how far reaching that his actions would take the black community in America. And I am thrilled for this. I've talked to so many African-American folks that are just absolutely thrilled over it. Not only that he's a member of their race, but that he's opened the doors. And I hope this is something that people remember. He's opened the doors for people of all colors and all creeds. It's opened the door. It's broken the ice. And now doors are open. And think of the youth, the example he sends for the youth. It's such a wonderful thing. You know, you take the young African-American kids, they look at a man like Barack Obama and now say, you know, I can do that. I can do that. That door's not shut to me anymore. I can do that too. And it doesn't make any difference what ethnicity is involved. I can do that. And it's hope that it's brought to, and it's a wonderful thing, a wonderful hope it's brought. Not only, and it's brought hope to the rest of the world too. As I mentioned about talking to the gentleman last night, it was such a pleasure to hear what they talked about for this country and how they've been so disappointed. And now we end with this very charismatic, very eloquent, very, very intelligent man as President of the United States. He's a fabulous role model, not only for the black community, but for all Americans. He's a special, special man. We're here with our special coverage of the Barack Obama inauguration. It's currently 4:10 here in Washington, D.C. They're coming up Pennsylvania Avenue, and I'm hearing earlier today, I spoke to some folks from Kenya that, of course, Barack Obama's father is from Kenya, and they actually sent a delegation over to enjoy the inauguration. They are just as proud as anybody, along with a tremendous number of Barack's relatives. As you know, he has quite an interesting family tree, quite an extended family tree, and there were dozens of them here today with the name Obama. They're getting back in the limousine now, and that's a thing. I'm glad to see them back in the limousine. It's nice to get out and take a walk there. I think they're coming up the old post office building now. Yes, that is where they're at. But, yes, that machine is quite something, that new car. But we were speaking about how we're all equal. And the man does believe that, does project that. All races, all religions, everybody joining in a common thought, becoming one. And not that we can't have the diverse feelings and thoughts that we do, but when it comes to service and love of country and the getting along with all the races, we do need to become one. And it's a terrific story that's taking place out on Pennsylvania Avenue right now. I don't know how much longer this will take today. I see there's Rahm Emanuel, a picture of Rahm Emanuel at the White House it was. Rahm, of course, is going to play an important part of that Illinois gang, and Rahm's going to play an important part. I for one, am excited about Rahm Emanuel being chief of staff at the White House. He's a no-nonsense guy, and he's going to serve the president well. I don't think there's any question about that. I want to going to look here just for a moment and see what we've got. I talked to Lanny Davis on Sunday, and many of you know Lanny Davis from, many, many appearances. And I'm going to see if we can play an interview with Lanny Davis right now. Okay, we're here. We're not getting any audio of that. I have no idea why not. Part of the fun of a live radio show at Radio Row. I thought we had that all worked out. We'll save that for you at a later date. A most interesting interview with Lanny Davis, a guy I really do enjoy very, very much. I don't know when I'm going to learn my lesson. I tried that yesterday and didn't get away with it. I thought thought we had it all lined up today, but we'll save that for a future time as something that we'll hold. Right now, we're going to send it back to Agnes for a break, and we'll see what's up next on the agenda here, and we'll drive back. So take it away, Agnes.
Walking down the road, tell me how long you gonna stay here, Joe. Some people say this town don't look good in snow. You don't care, I know. Ventura Highway.
Welcome to Seton Notes. I'm Tony Seton. Back in 1973, I was with ABC News covering the Nixon second inaugural. My assignment was to roam the streets with a film crew. That was back before the days of minicabs, watching how the police and anti-war demonstrators converged. It was frigidly cold, so there wasn't much violence, though a brick did hit the pavement about 5 feet from where I was standing. In 1977, I worked on the coverage of the Carter inauguration. It was a happier time, and I was indoors. Watching the inauguration of Barack Hussein Obama on television was a grand treat, from the ceremony to the content. Here are some observations. It's too bad John Roberts couldn't manage to get the 35-word oath correct, a minor stumble. Considering the lead role that Dianne Feinstein played, one has to wonder how she could have gotten her nose so out of joint about the Panetta nomination to head the CIA. Rick Warren's comments underscored his representation of the superficial megachurch culture that spouts bumper sticker scripture without a hint of true, deep spiritualism. Joseph Lowry, on the other hand, demonstrated the grandeur of aging wisdom. He also noted the critical theme of this inauguration of a multi-hued nation coming together with light and grace. The classical music from the Sterling Quartet of White, Yellow, Black, Jew, playing a piece composed by John Williams, was stellar in its performance and its rep of our era. George Bush looked like he would have rather been anywhere else. Seemed to be the happiest person at the event. Finally, most importantly, Barack Obama's speech was excellent, well-written, well-delivered. The message was on point. There is much work to do, and we must come together as a nation to do it. He knew how important his speech was. You could also see that he didn't come for the title, but for the work. And that's Seton Notes. For more, go to SetonNotes.com. I'm Tony Seton.
Thank you for joining us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. A fabulously eventful day today. I wonder, and actually I don't wonder anymore, have any of you seen an estimate of what kind of a crowd was there today? It had to be a couple of million. Certainly there was a couple of million. I don't care where you went in this town, anywhere in the downtown area, at least the adjacent streets to the mall and the New Jersey and Connecticut and any of the major arteries, just swamped with people. They made driving very difficult last night. Did a cab last night, and actually it would have been much easier to walk than it would have been to take a cab. Some reason you want to hear something funny, I'll tell you the whole story of what we did about going back and forth last. It would have been much easier, and by the way, much expensive to walk. I had a chance to go over to Union Station last evening, and the place, if you've been in Union Station, they've got pretty much a shopping center in there, and also a huge food court downstairs. Huge food court. I mean, anything you could ever want. The thing is monstrous, biggest food court you'll ever see. And it was just teeming with people. You couldn't find a place to sit down to have a cup of coffee. There were just people arriving on buses, people arriving on the trains, on the metro. Just it was just teeming with people, and all just so excited. Met people from my former neighborhood last night in Ohio. Met some people from all over the place, and all, of course the message was the same. I don't care who you talk to. The message was the same. It was an air of tremendous excitement, great hope, and just joy. If there's one word to sum it up, it's joy. When Mr. Bush left today on his helicopter for Andrews Air Force Base, I don't think anybody was sad about it. Maybe a handful, I don't know, but I certainly didn't wave goodbye to him in a sad fashion. I was thinking, "Hey, I'll see you." it's so good to have a changing of a guard. You know, that's a great thing about America. That's a great thing about an elected democracy. You get an administration you get damn tired of, you can get rid of them, get another one. And of course, I believe two terms for a president. I think that's a good thing. Yes, Franklin Roosevelt was around for four. He's the only one that ever had more than two. And not a lot of them have had two, but that's a good thing. Things change, and it's time to move on. They've got a great big, 50-inch TV in the radio row room here, and we're seeing pictures from the live from the presidential motorcade at 421, and just people waving and jumping up and down, and boy, that presidential limo is sure something. It looks like they got two of them, one for the president, one for the vice president. Got a spare. Maybe three of them, I'm not sure. They're now making the turn there in Pennsylvania. They'll be winding their way down to the White House very, very shortly, and we'll start to see all the floats and parade participants, all sorts of high school marching bands from Delaware and Nebraska. And you know what a thrill it is for a high school band to get invited to the presidential inauguration. They have to raise the money to do it, and it's quite a project. I've known one high school band that I was familiar with that got to go, and it was the experience of a lifetime. Absolutely the experience of a lifetime. You know, you can give us a call if you like. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I think it might have met Claire McCaskill, senator from the great state of Missouri. She's staying here at the hotel, and some of the Oprah folks are staying here at the hotel. Looking down through the schedule of the folks going to march, the Cleveland Firefighters Memorial Pipe and Drums, and I'm sure that, well, they'll probably show this whole thing live on TV with a few interruptions here and there with commercials. How do you feel about this new administration? Are you one that, and I've heard this opinion expressed, are you one that thinks, oh my, Bob, I got a note that Bob had just arrived at the airport. Is it 22 after 4? Yes, the Buster of the Head-On Radio Network, Bob Kincaid's going to join me tonight, and we're going to go to that Democratic Senate caucus tomorrow and reception tomorrow evening. And he has arrived at the airport, so I'm sure they've got a 21-gun salute out there. Yes, we do want to still meet him at the prearranged place, and Bob and I will probably have dinner tonight, and if he can make his way into town. He flew into Dulles, and a pretty fur trip from here, pretty good ride. He's gonna go down, take us down to where the metro, and then come into Union Station, and we're just... Agnes tells me on the chat room that Bob was kept in the air due to George Bush leaving. Uh-huh. Well, we went in George's way, that's for sure. I wondered. I was playing just a little bit later than what I thought it would be originally. Yes, in this, when the president moves, when they have a presidential motorcade, they will actually clear the streets. If they know that he's leaving the White House and he's going to go from one place to another, they will clear the streets and there won't be anybody on him. Of course, that's a smart move not to telegraph where he's going and all. So, common sight to folks in this town. But on the State of the Union, for example, when, you know, as you know, we come to the town for the State of the Union a few times, and when you are there, you are captive until the president has left the building and is on his way back to the White House. So whatever president does, it's going to trump whatever you're doing. That's for sure. You can count on that. Be sure and give Agnes a call at the studio if you'd like to talk to the program. We would love to find out what you're thinking about the inauguration. Were you as excited about it? Is the TV doing a good job of bringing you the details? Are they being fair in the coverage? Are the what is Fox having to say about it? You know, the Irish gentleman that I was telling you about, I had dinner with last night, and they brought it up. I didn't. They brought it up about Fox News. And, you know, I wanted to hear what they had about Fox News. And they said, you know, we watch Fox News in Ireland when we're entertainment. It's funny. We don't take it seriously. It's actually funny. We look at it just like you do the comic books. That's how we look at Fox News. They really had a definite opinion about good old Fox News. It was very interesting to hear them say that. Ivan and Sean, if you're listening today, and they said they would be, hello, and I've now divulged everything that you guys said last night, almost everything anyway. Again, we're watching the motorcade come down the street. It was an interesting experience today, heading on over to the inauguration. We had to go through the electronic machines to see if we had anything on us that we shouldn't have. There were many things that we weren't on. It looks as though the president's going to get out of the limo again. Yes, they are. And the security was very tight, but I must say, also very friendly. You know, sometimes you go through security one place or another, and they're not all that friendly, and they're just a little bit too serious. Well, they have done a good job getting ready for the inauguration here. I think it's been handled very, very well. They were very friendly about it, although very thorough, and nobody got through those scanners with having something that they shouldn't have like an inauguration. So everybody felt very, very safe. They're passing by the Treasury Department right now. I think that's the Treasury building in the background. Turning the corner there. They'll be heading for the White House very shortly. Yes, it was a cure feeling because despite the fact there were thousands upon thousands of people, perhaps millions, security was tight. It was visible. There were enclosed people in the crowd. You saw them milling around. You know you knew who they were. And yet this thing went off without a hitch as far as I know. We are saddened by the fact that both Ted Kennedy and Robert Byrd both collapsed at the inauguration. Very, very sad fact, and we certainly hope everything's all right with them. They have turned the corner at Treasury now and are heading down past in front of the Treasury building, coming down to the review stand that's been built in front of the White House. Those of you that visit Washington very much anymore know you can't drive on the north side of the White House because they've got it all barricaded off, and rightly so. And actually, I think that's been a good thing. The street between Lafayette Park and the White House has been barricaded for a number of years now, and it really gives the public a chance to walk across the street and just kind of take it easy and look around and get a wonderful view of the White House without having to worry about traffic. I know the locals probably don't think of it because it's kind of put a hitch in traveling up Pennsylvania Avenue, but it's really nice. Lafayette Park is immediately north, and alongside of there is where Blair House is, where the Obamas have been staying the past few days. And it's a beautiful, beautiful area, and I would suggest that anybody should take their family to Washington, D.C. That should be one of the family vacations you get in, one that when the kids are young and old enough to understand anyway what the United States government's all about and the presidency's all. There's nothing like a trip to Washington, D.C. It's one of the great cultural cities in the country. Without question, all sorts of wonderful cultural events taking place here. And also, there's a feeling. There's a feeling in the city, and I've never gotten used to it. I come here a lot, and I've just never gotten used to it. All entering the White House never went away. It never went away. Every day when you walked in there, it just felt the majesty of the White House. So, and the United States, it's like a happy couple today, and at least along Pennsylvania Avenue. So we're going to pause for a short break right now. We're going to turn down back to Agnes at the bottom of the hour. So Agnes, by the way, thanks to Agnes for doing a wonderful job running the production today. An expert, you know. So get back to Agnes, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And you can take it away anytime you like, Agnes.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy source is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here are some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Mark CFV.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers. It presents Native Perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Tobago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
All right, back with you here, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. A lot of stress put on communications facilities here in Washington. the telecom industries, the internet and phone companies have brought extra equipment in to try and handle the tremendous number of messages and photos and whatnot that'll be sent. And haven't been entirely successful with it. Telephone calls have been being dropped all day long. The motorcade's now turning down the west side of the old executive office building. Frankly, one of the ugliest buildings in Washington. I don't know, it's just got, I thought the old executive office building is called the Eisenhower building now, but got, I don't know, some kind of a sinister look to it. I can't exactly describe it, but it, they'll ground that, and then they'll come in the south side of the White House, and then the president will come out of the reviewing stand from that end. But the old executive office building, not one of the prettiest buildings in Washington, D.C., and I've often wondered over the years if when that building gets in disrepair and major work, if they'll let it stand or if they'll tear it down and build something new. I would be in favor of doing that. I don't think it's one of those buildings that you try and save if it gets too bad. So we'll see. Although they just have completed some major work on it, I would finish the thing. Now Cheney's moved out. That's a harsh comment, isn't it? I really do feel that way. I wouldn't want to be in the same office the guy was in unless I know it had been steam cleaned and everything else. I don't have to tell you my feelings about Dick Cheney. And I guess many of you don't have to tell me about yours. We're glad he is gone. Hope to never see his face again. Dick Cheney has been bad for America. I think we can say that unequivocally. Frankly, I talked to a guy a couple of weeks ago that's a big fan of Dick Cheney, and I just had to sit and look at him and go, what the hell is wrong with you? I know. You're welcome to give us a call at the Head On Radio Network toll-free number, and we hope you will do. We'd love to hear your comments about what's happening, what your feelings are as far as what's taking place today, the inauguration. Are you excited about it geopolitically? Are you excited about it for the idea that that we have somebody, finally, that's not a white Anglo guy as president? What's the big thing that you feel the best about? And is there, are you excited about the Obama administration and the things that they might achieve? I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. I can't wait to get started. And it sounds to me like they're going to get, they're going to start, hit the ground running. They have every intention, and I think he's put a great team into place, and I think almost all of them will get confirmed. And they've done a great deal of preparation work already. It's fascinating, and many times you hear them say that they don't know who they're going to appoint for this and that office. You know, they must have given it some thought. He must have given it thought. You know, in his heart of hearts, Barack Obama probably considered Hillary Clinton for Secretary of State early on. There was all that talk of possibly the vice presidency and all, but he must have had that in mind early on. That isn't something that came to him all of a sudden, I'm sure. Tonight in Washington, everybody's going to have their best clothes on, new clothes on, whatever, and they're going to head out to any number of presidential balls tonight. There's going to be a lot of them. They're all over town at different places. I don't know exactly just how many there are, something like 53. It's just a tremendous number of them, and they are definitely spaced out all over town. Some of the interesting numbers from the inauguration, there were 1,382 applications received by the committee forming the inauguration that wanted to march in the inaugural parade. There are actually 10 officials sanctioned by the presidential inauguration, headed by Dianne Feinstein, by the way, and now I see the president is walking into the White House underneath the Truman Portico, going in that way, and they will come out the front and go in the reviewing stand. But Yes, 10 official inaugural balls will be held tonight and a number of other events all around the town. There are 8,000 members of America's police departments providing security on Inauguration Day. And there will, in fact, be about 90 groups marching in the Inauguration Parade. 18,000 volunteers. And just imagine, people have complained about the cost of this inauguration, but just imagine how much of the time is volunteers not paid for. There are 13,000 people participating in the inaugural parade, and 120,000, the number of passengers the metro trains plan to carry per hour Inauguration Day. Imagine that, 120,000 people per hour on Inauguration Day. That's a fantastic number. And from all I'm hearing, the metro is going very well. I haven't heard of any significant problems. Of course, that's the key, in my opinion. The metro is the key to getting this thing done. There are 10 big Jumbotron screens that were put along the mall and broadcasting the events today. 432 people on the Presidential Inauguration Committee staff. And it has been 76 years since Mickey Rooney, who will be riding atop the Spirit of the Linkway fire truck in this year's parade, participated in his first inaugural. Imagine that. 76 years ago, Mickey Rooney was in, and he's going to be on the Lincoln Highway fire truck, Spirit of the Lincoln Highway. I am one that happened to be very, very familiar with the Lincoln Highway. I lived along the Lincoln Highway that stretched all across America. There are going to be 11 Native American tribes participating in this year's inaugural parade. And 14 is the number of consecutive inaugurals that Charlie Brotman has acted as the parade announcer, including this year's event. And Brotman has announced that for 11 different presidents. So, interesting statistics here for this tremendous inauguration, and they've done a wonderful job putting out a media guide for the press. I must say, it's got everything, all the important phone numbers you could possibly want for all taxi cabs. They've made this almost impossible situation tolerable. It's a monumental feat planning something like this. I have to tell you, at 9 o'clock this morning, and looking around and out walking around, I couldn't imagine that they were going to get this thing off on time. And somehow they did. It looked to me to be impossible at that time. And yet somehow it all pulled together and pulled together very smoothly. So kudos to the people that handled this, I think, and to the people as well. In large crowds before. This is a... The crowd has trouble that I know. And then on TV right now, we're seeing the review stand. That thing is it's heated and comfortable from what we understand. Want to stay away from having a situation where, was it Harrison? Caught pneumonia and passed away in 30 days. We don't want that to happen again, so let's keep him very, very comfortable in there. Been a number of very, very interesting things happen over the years at inaugural events. Reagan's, like I mentioned, is the first one to break the tradition and put the whole inauguration out on the west terrace of the U.S. Capitol rather than on the east front. That was something different. And imagine this one. They could not have done it. For those of you that are not really familiar with this wonderful city, it used to be the east side of the White House, or the Capitol building, and it looks across the street at the Supreme Court and the Library of Congress where you can now through the new underground reception for visitors, the reception area. But that would accommodate a great number of people, and yet the size of this crowd they had today, no way. I never did get to see a picture of it from where I was standing. I couldn't tell how far the crowd stretched, if it made it all the way down to the Lincoln Memorial or not in the mall. Maybe some of you have seen, I'm not sure. But a tremendous crowd, and again, congratulations to everybody in planning this. The worst screw-up that I've seen all day long was by Justice Roberts in messing up the oath of office, which to me just seems inconceivable that the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court could do that, but Obama caught it real quick and kind of straightened him out on it. But we're going to pause for a break here now, and if that's okay with Agnes, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we hope you'll join us for the last quarter hour or so of the Guy James Show here in our special inaugural presentation.
Want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's a little test for you. Identify the following water-saving devices around your home. Using water wisely is important since our growing population puts pressure on this limited resource. Ready? That's water-saving device number 19, your outdoor faucet. Check faucets and hoses for drips or leaks to save water and money. That's your toothbrush, water-saving device number 54. Turn the faucet off while you brush and save up to 25 gallons a month. It's water-saving device number 11, your water bill. If it's unusually high, you could have a leak. Learn to detect and repair leaks by contacting your water provider. Last clue? That's BeWaterSmart.net, a helpful website full of water-saving tips from the Water Conservation Coalition and your local water provider. There are a number of ways to save water, and they all start with you. Water, use it wisely.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up the house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It flashed.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that seems long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really my friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
And I feel like I could do everything now.
A public service is brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Oh, yes, we were talking about the inaugural ball taking place tonight. I am not going to attend to those. I didn't have an extra 10 grand sitting around that I wanted to put in on an inaugural ball tonight. But they are quite lavish affairs, and they're held. I don't have actually even have a schedule where they're held tonight, but usually they have one down at the Omni Shoreham, and that's always a place they have one anyway, which is one of the nicest places in town. But a little history on the inaugural balls, and I think it's very interesting. On May 7th, 1789, a week after the inauguration of George Washington in New York City, and remember, it was New York City, the sponsors held a ball to honor the new president. And it wasn't until 1809, however, after the inauguration of James Madison at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., that the tradition of the inaugural ball actually began, a tradition. And that night, First Lady Dolly Madison hosted the gala at Long's Hotel, and they sold 400 tickets for $4 apiece. Now, that was a pretty good sum in those days, $4 apiece. And in 1833, two balls were staged for President Andrew Jackson, one at Carusi's Assembly Rooms and the other at the Central Masonic Hall. And William Henry Harrison attended all three of the 1841 inaugural balls held in his honor, but as you all know, that didn't work out so well for him later. And the inaugural ball quickly turned into an anticipated highlight of Washington society, and it still is, believe me. The ladies out looking for the very finest they can find to wear to these events. And its location became a big topic of discussion. Organizers wanted a building that could accommodate huge numbers of guests, and a temporary wooden building was erected in the city's Judiciary Square in 1849 for one of Zachary Taylor's inaugural balls. But by the time of James Cannon's inauguration in 1857, the idea of multiple balls was abandoned for one grand ball that could accommodate thousands of guests. And again, they built another wooden temporary ballroom in Judiciary Square just for the occasion. And they had $3,000 worth of wine, 400 gallons of oysters, 400 quarts of chicken salad, 100 quarts of ice cream, and 60 saddles, 8 rounds of beef, 75 hams, and 125 tongues. So, well, that must have been an interesting menu. Certainly was. In 1865, the ball followed Lincoln's second inauguration, took place at the model room of the patent office. And that's the first time a government building was used for the celebration. And the inaugural ball for Grant's 1869 inauguration was held in the north wing of the Treasury building. And there wasn't enough room for that, so they gradually moved it to other venues, and there are several now. And, of course, the Obamas tonight will be gadflies, and they'll go around at several of these balls, putting in a few minutes at each one that they can. They won't spend a great deal of time at any of them, but they'll be worn out by the time tonight's over. But imagine closing the evening knowing that you're spending the first night in the White House as the President of the United States. Now, certainly there's an amount of great joy that goes along with that and anticipation, but also there's the sobering thought of the task that you are about to take on. And I'm sure Barack Obama has thought long and hard about all this, and I think his feet are planted squarely on the ground and knows where he is going with this. So it's going to be an exciting evening around here. It's going to be very exciting for Barack Obama, and I think you will see him get started almost immediately tomorrow on starting to make things better here in America. Some interesting first and facts about the inaugurations. James Madison, his inauguration was held in the House chamber of the Capitol. which was the first inaugural ball, was held that evening. James Monroe, we have the Monroe House where Monroe actually lived, on up the street, just up Pennsylvania Avenue, down by the Lombardi Hotel. James Monroe was the first president to take the oath of office and delivered the inaugural address outdoors. It took place on the platform in front of the temporary brick capitol where the Supreme Court now stands. A lot of people don't know that. There used to be the old brick capitol building, and that was where the Supreme Court built. I think the Supreme Court building, and if memory serves me correct, I think it was built right around 1935. I'm not sure. Certainly not one of the older buildings in the city. And also, something a lot of you may not have taken into account, whenever the 20th falls on a Sunday, then they will have the inauguration the next day. So that's happened several times over the years. And the last time Chief Justice John Marshall administered the oath of office, he presided over 9 inaugurations, 9, from Adams to Jackson. Wow. And the first president who was not born, think about this, the first president who was not born a British subject, the first time the president-elect and president rode to the Capitol for the inauguration together, was Martin Van Buren in 1837. I do want to take a moment and thank you for being with us today. This has been a tremendous experience for me. It is my first inauguration. Been to many of us in Washington, D.C., and I don't think I've ever enjoyed one any more than we are today. This is a tremendous event, and it's been an honor to be a part of it. That's certainly true. Tomorrow, we're going to attend the Senate Democratic Caucus, and there'll be a reception in the evening, so we're looking forward to that as well. And Bob's going to join me tonight, and I'm sure Bob and I will go out and have a good dinner somewhere tonight if we can find it, and just basically enjoy ourselves for the it'll be all about tonight. Looking forward to hooking up with Bob tonight and having a good dinner and lots of conversation. Once again, we do want to thank you for being with us. It's been an honor, been a pleasure to be here on Radio Row for the inauguration of Barack H. Obama, the new president of the United States. I say that with a lot of pride, very happy about it, couldn't be more pleased than to have this man as the president of the United States. So thanks for joining us. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang, and have a good evening.
By the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er ramparts we